All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Friday, September 9th. I am Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are coming off the first game of the season last night, Thursday, between Denver and Carolina. We'll get to that in 1 second. We're from DFSR.com, DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, trying to help you get started or continue playing and winning in DFS, in this case NFL, for FanDuel and DraftKings. Head over to the site now, /NFL, and it will get you a trial through this Sunday's games. So you'll get that trial through week one, see how, you know, sort of road test the projections, see how MLB and NFL work, take a look at our brand new NFL Player Lab, which helps you search and filter through a bunch of different criteria that you can use to put together lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, and then just $29.95 a month after that covers you for all sports. You are all set. DFSR.com/NFL. Last night's game, I know it wasn't too interesting to, in DFS purposes, I didn't find it to be really interesting, and we had kind of said that leading in, that we were fine just not playing any of the players from that game and just kind of getting value in going into the rest of the weekend. Though, a couple of takeaways of things that we can, you know, sort of looking forward for, I mean, maybe more the Panthers and the Broncos, but what were some things when we're starting to look at projections for next week, what are some things that jumped out to you in terms of what we might be changing for either one of those teams?
I think the most surprising thing for us, and probably a lot of people in the industry, was Kelvin Benjamin's appearance in this game. For those who don't remember, Benjamin was super, super highly targeted, looking like he was on track to be a true wide receiver one for daily fantasy purposes before missing all of last season. We thought he was going to be on a snap count this week. Ron Rivera had alluded to something like 35 snaps. He wound up being out there for 54 snaps, 12 targets, 6 receptions against a very tough Denver defense. So he is going to be, I have to think, a tremendous value next week, especially because he still didn't put up the eye-popping numbers given the tough defense he was up against. But he's going to be a guy that we're very bullish on for week two. And actually, I haven't looked at the matchup there yet because it's week one right now. But yeah, I'm going to be keeping a sharp eye on him as the season progresses here.
Yeah, well, Rivera alluded to a snap count of like 35, and I guess he just left off the part of the sentence where it was like in the first half, because I'm pretty sure like that was where Benjamin right. Just played the entire first half. And, you know, that's one of those situations where, oh well, to not know it, I think it was fine to speculate or just to be sort of bearish on what his target numbers were going to look like. But 12 targets, that's wide receiver one territory, right? And if he's, and like you said, against a good defense, if that's just going to be the trend for him, then he really climbs the ranks of wide receivers going forward. And next week they face San Francisco, who will also know a little bit more about with Chip Kelly moving over there in terms of what they play in terms of pace going forward. So I think this is where you just get so much more information from all you, for some of these things, all you simply need is 1 week to figure it out. And I know sometimes you can be too late on those things. You know, for our purposes, we're just trying to not play it safe, but just have the closest what we think would be a mean projection for him. But then you just get so much more of an information gain, and some people will figure it out, some people won't. We'll have it built into the projections for next week, and we'll know a lot more about both those teams going in.
And I think, and on the Denver side of the ball, we should mention too, CJ Anderson went out there and had a tremendous first game of the season, 137 yards. Was heavily featured in the passing game as well. So if that's going to be the case, I mean, Anderson was a guy who was pretty active in the passing game last season, more so towards the end of the season. But if they're not going to trust Trevor Siemian to throw the ball downfield, and it didn't look like that was anything like the plan yesterday, he's a guy whose stock immediately goes up as well. Both Anderson and Benjamin weren't on the super cheap in week one. Like Benjamin in particular, I'm realizing at 7,300, he's not even a guy, frankly, we really considered. So just didn't invest a lot of my mental RAM in that. But Anderson was at 6,700. And if he's going to get 20 carries and 4 receptions in a game, like, he's going to wind up skyrocketing up in our rankings, especially. I mean, the nice thing here was, I suspect he wasn't super highly owned given that, you know, but it was such a tough defensive matchup, and there were some question marks there, but he got paid. It looks like he's going to be the running back one definitively going forward, and I think he'll see a big boost in expectation going forward.
It's funny, because he was not that highly owned, but he was more highly owned than he even would have been if this hadn't been the Thursday game. If this game is being played Sunday at 4 instead of Thursday, then you really would have seen even much, much lower ownership on him. As it stood, he still wasn't there. You know, if you went down the list of some FanDuel and DraftKings teams last night, you saw that there were people that just said, just get them all in on the Denver and Carolina this game so I have a sweat. And this is just what we talked about for why it's great to play these Thursday games. Now, again, did some people I don't know if you want to call it luck out by being able to do that with guys like Anderson or Benjamin. Sure, but on the whole, that's just not a good practice at all. And you still, typically, a person that does something like that is stacking the whole game. And yes, those two players produced, but a bunch of other ones that they rostered did not.
If you played Cam Newton, you got murdered. If you played Simeon, you got murdered.
Well, so Cam Newton himself almost got murdered. Like there's some question about whether or not Denver or Carolina did the proper concussion protocol with him near the end of the game. So it's going to be interesting. The only thing that can sort of bite into the Benjamin thing is as we get news on Cam. So, you know, Cam's still not very accurate last night, 18 for 33. This is a very, very good defense, of course, and so it's hard to make total judgments about that. Actually, the more interesting judgment for me is that Denver was, you know, not prolific on offense, but were able to move the ball against Carolina, and this is a team featuring Trevor Siemian as the quarterback. So it's interesting to me. Carolina just probably is not on the level they were last year. They lose a lot of that secondary.
Well, they turn over their cornerback position. A lot of people thought they were going to start two rookies at cornerback in the first game. They didn't. They went with some veterans. You know, it's so hard to evaluate their cornerback play, given that it was Trevor Siemian at the quarterback for Denver. But I think some people we can declare as losers for this game, especially given, you know, Carolina's questionable cornerback situation this season. And, you know, they haven't really added a ton in the pass rush element either, are Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. You know, I think people were still fairly bullish on them going forward, and kind of the conventional wisdom was, well, hey, look what they did last year with bad quarterback play. But it's going to be something totally different if they just never trust Siemian to throw the ball down the field. So who knows how that'll play out. You know, maybe Siemian will get his sea legs under him and they'll trust him a little bit more going forward. But I am downgrading them in our forecast for next week for sure.
Yep. Let's move into some some news and notes that we can start thinking about or kind of wrapping our mind around heading into Sunday's games, which are obviously the probably for a lot of you what you came to listen for. So a couple of the bigger pieces. Last podcast we were on, we or me specifically, I guess both of us, really were on the Spencer Ware hype train. I went probably so far as to say he was just a must play. And, you know, about a day later after that, I somewhat regretted it. If it had been an article, I would have made a note in there and said, this is not as a clear-cut a situation as I maybe presented in the last podcast. And for that, I'm not necessarily apologizing, but I'm doing a somewhat of a mea culpa there. Talk to us about, like, why we are not as gung-ho on the Ware situation that we maybe were 36 hours ago.
Yeah, so, I mean, first of all, we didn't think that there was any chance Jamaal Charles would play at all this week. Now it looks like he's practiced on Wednesday and Thursday, and he's probably, you know, working his way back into shape. He might steal 5 to 7 carries in this game. He might just not play at all, but it adds more question marks in. We've got, you know, Nile Davis and Charcandrick West both getting a lot of action in practice. So it's just turned into a very uncertain situation. And I don't think, you know, we were basically saying he was the guy, especially in the goal line and all that stuff. And if he's going to be sharing around not only goal line carries, but the workload out of the backfield and almost certainly third down and things like that, I don't think you can call him a strict safety play anymore. I think that he's still a very solid big tournament option just because he's so cheap and allows you to pay up at higher upside positions. And obviously the upside is still there. Like, he does get a lot of goal line work around the goal line. So I think that still a good option for big tournaments. I'm very hesitant to call him anything like a safe play for cash games.
And that's the biggest issue. We had downgraded his projection just a little bit, you know, sometime in the early morning of yesterday, where we just said he was showing up in all optimal lineups. I mean, he's still there on DraftKings because the price is still so cheap. And even at like 3/4 of the workload that we had him originally for.
Yeah, that assumes him for something like 12 or 13 total touches. So.
Right. And that's still a value on DraftKings. And I think it's still fine there. The problem with rostering him to me last night going in on FanDuel was there was too many unknowns with guys that were just more known, you know, like the Lamar, maybe not totally known, but like Lamar Miller or D'Angelo Williams were the two guys that were in our optimal lineup for Thursday. I'm feeling fine about that for that, considering that's locked in now. And it just seems to me that there's just enough question marks there where I'm not totally, totally, totally so confident with where, again, this could change. Like, we could get to Sunday morning and now we know Charles is out, let's say, and there's just some beat reporters that are saying, you know, in practice, this was where all the workload went. He was running third down reps in practice. And if we were to get news like that on Ware, I'm not positive we will. If we were to get news like that, then we would boost the projection back up, and you're going to see him in optimal lineups. But, you know, as of right now, Friday before noon, it's too dicey to just call him a full lock and load where we were, you know, sometime around Wednesday evening, Thursday morning.
Yep, absolutely. Another big news guy that's come out, at least where we've modified his projection quite a bit, is Devontae Freeman. The Falcons are coming out and saying that they're going to go with who's hot at running back this season. The ESPN Falcons reporter was saying that he thought Coleman would be the workhorse. Kyle Shanahan is kind of saying things to the contrary. So it's just kind of a huge question mark. You know, Freeman's not going to be the guy, like the slam dunk first round pick in a season long draft kind of guy. It doesn't look like, and it's not like you're getting him at a tremendous value anyway. So I would say that he's moved into the strict stay away category for me. Unless we get obviously some big news to the contrary, but at 8,100 on FanDuel, you just can't do it. So, not that we were strongly considering him anyway, but even for big tournaments, things like that, it just seems like probably the worst direction you could go at the running back position for week one.
So funny about coach speak, because I always wonder about when guys say like things like this, like, is it too, because they think it's going to somewhat motivate the guy, like, you know, just not to be too complacent. Like maybe they don't actually totally mean it, because, you know, understanding like who's hot at running back is just such a weird thing to try to evaluate, I think, for a coach. Sometimes I try to think that, or tend to think those things are more to, I don't know, light, quote unquote, light a fire or whatever under a guy. It's enough that I'm willing to take it at its word, and he's just not a safe guy. But I just hate that kind of hyperbole stuff. It just doesn't seem helpful to me. And I have a feeling, sure, that sometimes they just do it because they think it's just good motivational tactics. But I'm not unclear if that's actually works or not. Speaking of running backs, Thomas Rawls was sick yesterday, I believe, and did not practice. That throws just a little bit more of the question marks around him. It was already in one of those situations where, is it going to be Rawls? How much, if at all, was he going to play for Seattle this weekend as opposed to Michael? He gets sick yesterday. You know, sickness doesn't have to do with, obviously, what the injury issues that he had, but it just adds another maybe point against him. It's one less day of practice. The guy's barely practiced at all, did not play at all for the preseason. One less day of practice leading into the game, where you need to assume that Michael gets all the first team reps again. Where do you stand on that situation right now? Would that be the pivot from Ware to Michael, sort of in that same price range, or is this still too much of a question mark right now?
Yeah, I mean, Michael and Rawls, we debated their situation earlier in this week, and you know, I was kind of taking the side that Michael looked to already be kind of moving into the kind of committee chairman role of the committee there. But I think that for week one, it's looking more and more like we're just going to see a ton of Michael. You know, I don't know whether, I mean, they didn't disclose any details about Rawls's illness. It could be a case of the NBA flu, where guys just get sick all the time for no apparent reason, quote unquote sick. Or it could be, you know, something more serious. You know, illness and injury are not really related at all. So like, this doesn't raise any red flags about the ankle. Like, I'd be much more concerned for Rawls's long-term prospects if this was due to the ankle stuff. But I don't suspect. Rawls is obviously completely off the table. As for Michael, definitely a reasonable big tournament option, a very, very strong one, in fact, just given how cheap he is on FanDuel. I can't with any confidence say that he's a strict cash game play just yet, even though I do think it's quite a nice situation with the Hawks highly favored against Miami in the first week. So I'm just not totally sure there. I do suspect that if we hear anything else about Rawls, that Michael might wind up being one of the top-owned running backs on FanDuel. You'll just have to keep an eye out for industry buzz and Twitter and the Rawls situation. So kind of a non-answer, but I don't think it's definitive quite yet.
No, I agree. And like I said, I wasn't wrapping the sickness and the ankle together. It was more just losing more every day that you don't practice. It seems to me, especially in football, less likely that you play more, right? Like, so if you're not out there
I would say they have an inverse relationship for especially these sort of tier two players that are not household names, but, you know, quality guys. And just one more thing, I mean, we talked about considering Ware as an option on DraftKings given the uncertainty of that situation. For me, I think Christian Michael is a much better cheap running back punt sort of play. He's only 3,700, which makes him even more affordable, and I think there are considerably fewer question marks about his playing time. So if you're really looking for, I think probably safety and upside at the RB2 position, Michael is moving more into that category for me than Ware was.
Oh, for sure. If I was setting the lineup right now, that would be the guy. Like if the lineup lock was in 2 hours or whatever, I think that would be the clear pivot. It might end up being that we play both, right? It might end up being that you just go double cheap or cheap with him and then one of the other guys in the flex or something like that, and you really pay up. And like we said on DraftKings, DraftKings does not have the same advantages this week as FanDuel does. The pricing is tougher because some of the very top players are so very expensive that it's harder to fit in all that salary. I could see a lot of people, if the news were to break right, you just go double cheap Michael and Ware at running back, and that makes a lot of sense to me. So, if we were setting the lineups right this second, yes, I agree with you. It would be Michael over Ware. The other running back situation, and it's far, far less interesting, I believe, than what we've talked about already, is that, you know, the Ravens cut Justin Forsett, sign him back a day later, right? So whatever you want to read into that, I don't really care about, you know, how teams structure their contracts or it says about, you know, how they feel about a guy. He's back on the team. It's him, it's Allen, or Javorius Allen, Buck Allen, and Terrence West. Any of these guys at all on your radar for the Ravens, or is just this kind of like, let this poo-poo platter just sort itself out and we'll figure it out later?
Yeah, no, I don't really have any desire to jump into that quagmire just yet. I think that we can definitely take a wait and see there. I'm almost strictly not interested. So, yeah, that's pretty much my analysis there.
Bringing that hot fire analysis, buddy.
Yeah, Buffalo's fine against the run. Like, they could split carries. You know, they liked Terrence West, it seemed like, for a little while there. So, I don't know. Like, what do you like any of the situation?
Oh, no. There wasn't much to say. I was just making fun of you.
So don't make fun of me then, because I'm trying my best. All right.
You're trying your best.
And the last little piece of news, and it's not exactly news, but it's something that we've debated hotly in the DFSR clubhouse /office /lab or wherever we work, from separate locations in two different states. But the Josh Norman, Antonio Brown thing has become more and more intriguing as the week's gone along. I wrote a little updates thing yesterday that just talked a little bit about, you know, our thoughts on Antonio Brown for week one, because he's so clearly the number one wide receiver in fantasy that it's hard to do anything but praise him from week to week. But a lot of people are throwing shade on Brown this week because he's obviously got this really tough matchup with Josh Norman. And the big question we've been debating in our offices here is, so what impact does a singular talent like Norman make when he goes from a defense in Carolina that was tremendous against wide receiver one last season, obviously, to a place in Washington that was pretty darn terrible? Because I think a lot of times, and you pointed out that we evaluate cornerbacks in a vacuum based on just overall results. Maybe it's like DVOA against the position, like Football Outsiders does, or kind of more generic stuff that you'll hear on ESPN or places like that. But oftentimes that's incorrect, right? Because there's the pass rush to consider. There's, you know, how often does that cornerback get help from the safeties and so on. And so, or how often does that cornerback even line up against the wide receiver one? Do they do shadowing? Do they just play a given side of the field? You know, there's so many different variables in play that it's really tough to pinpoint exactly how a matchup's going to play out until you have a quarter's worth of data under your belt. But this Brown situation at least got a little bit more clarity. The Redskins defensive coordinator, Joe Barry, came out and said that normally they would definitely shadow Brown in this case, but since Brown kind of moves around in the field a lot, it's going to be a little bit tougher for them. They do plan on shadowing him when Norman and Brown line up on the same side of the field, but they will deploy a different number of players on him. So I think that, you know, that increases Brown's stock a little bit for me, makes him a little bit more safe. I mean, he's always fairly safe, but it seems to me that when he's not being covered by Norman, he's going to be target number one, two, and three for Roethlisberger. So it's not breaking news to say Brown's a good play this week, but I think his stock has gone up a little bit in my mind.
Well, and just so if you're not looking at, you know, if you're not listening to this while also looking at our projections, at some point yesterday when we were fiddling with what we thought some of the metrics were for the Redskins versus overall the pass overall and definitively wide receiver one, some of the moves that we made, regressing some of their stats and just making some manual adjustments to what we thought the multipliers were, actually took Brown out of the DraftKings lineup. So he's still there on FanDuel. I almost said on football. He's still there on FanDuel.
On the football side.
And I don't think that changes just because we've made all of the downgrade adjustments on him that we would have. And so I don't think he's pretty much set there. On DraftKings, it's a little closer though, because you have a situation where you can either You almost have to play. You have to play Julio Jones in cash games. So that's not moving. Julio Jones is set in his spot. The question now becomes: Is Antonio the guy that you also pay up for if you're rostering two bigger salary guys? I'm tempted in the end to say it probably ends up with him there, but it's much closer than I would have thought maybe a week ago, right? And I think that's more of the question, is how close it is. So right now he's not there. I think we could see things shift a little bit. Again, we're still waiting on news. These things, you cannot set your lineups for DFS on Friday afternoon and just hope that everything works out. You really can't even set them at 11:30, right? Like on Sunday morning. You need to wait. If you're going, well, depending on what your goals are. If you just want to have fun, then whatever, set them whenever you want. But if your goals are to be profitable or to just have an edge over the competition, if you're the kind of person that sets your lineup at 11:30 and then heads out to the bar, you know, to get a good seat, and that's going to be the last you kind of look at things, then you're going to be significantly behind. So this is something that for our purposes will change up until the last minute, I suspect. It will even change after the last minute with the way the NFL is reporting injuries. You know, as of last year, typically right around 1 o'clock, we had things pretty much set. I don't believe that's going to be the case anymore. I think you're going to see things continue to shift, where it's really going to matter, especially in DraftKings for late swap. You'll see things shift even after that 1 o'clock mark. You know, we're not going to be at the bar, like drinking and watching games. That's not how we operate. Sundays are work days for us, and that's how we view them. So, just knowing that. There's going to be more information that comes. And I think if I were to guess now, Brown ends up being in there, but it's going to be closer than I ever thought it would have been.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. We'll just have to keep monitoring it and keep breaking it down. But yeah, I don't suspect we're going to get too much more news on the Brown thing. So I would suspect that's kind of our final analysis there.
Buddy, are you a little disappointed that I kind of told you that Sunday's a work day for you now? Or like, were you expecting to do something else? I hear like a little downgrade in your voice. I want to make sure you understand you're going to work on Sunday.
I've worked every Sunday for the last year and a half.
You're going to work this Sunday as well. I just want to let you know that. And I don't want to punch your time card or anything, but you're going to be there. So. Yeah.
And just so everyone knows, Doug makes a lot of jibes about my work schedule. I happen to work 6 days a week. Doug happens to work 7 days a week. So yes, he does work more days than I do. But I'm in here, buddy. I'm with you in the trenches most of the time.
Someone said to me in the chat room, we have a chat room up on the site. Someone said in the chat room the other day, they said, "Oh, Doug's checked out on baseball. He wasn't even around last night." And I was like, am I allowed to take like one night off from being, I literally took one like 4 hour stretch of a baseball slate off where I wasn't around in the chat room. And so I guess I take it as a compliment because it's like, well, now the expectation is like, oh, this guy's always around. But then at the same time, I'm like, man, I just took like one 4 to 5 hour baseball stretch off, and now it's like, where were you, man? Come on.
Well, one guy was worried. Like, I went in there on Wednesday nights. I'm often in the chat room leading up to lock, and we just happen to have a thing. We're rolling out a big advertising campaign, and there were some kind of emergencies with the integration that you guys don't care about. But so I happened to be on the phone from 6 to 6:30 trying to figure this stuff out, get in there at 6:30 and say hi. And like three people were like, phew, we were worried about you guys. There was no one in here. So long story short is we're in the chat all the time. So anyway, do you want to get into break down some games for week one here?
For sure. We'll obviously spend a little bit more time on some of these games than others. Some of these games for me, for DFS purposes, outside of just going totally contrarian or just trying to get super low ownership, are almost total skips for me. So, yep. I mean, we might end up just saying skip in that, you know, that doesn't mean that there isn't anybody you can consider.
Especially not for big tournaments. It's right. The disclaimer here is that, you know, anyone who starts and is going to be on the field for most of their team's offensive plays could be involved in a winning big tournament matchup. So like when we dive in here in a second to the Browns and Eagles matchup, and we just don't mention, you know, Jordan Matthews given a new quarterback and whatever else, and then he wins the GPP, don't come telling us that you told us so.
All right, well, let's start with that game actually, because you know, if Matthews maybe isn't on the table, the Eagles still are favorites here, which probably says a little bit about the Browns. Is there anyone interesting to you at all in this game?
Yeah, I mean, well, I mentioned Matthews. He actually is still a reasonable big tournament play. I think the main guy, the most highly owned guy in this game is going to be Gary Barnidge. And
you think so? I wonder if our system's higher than a lot of other people. I'm not like concerned about it, but you'd think that he'll be like a chalkier play in the industry?
I think he'll be the highest owned player in this game.
Oh, in this
I mean,
game.
Are gotcha. There other guys in this game that you think are going to... I mean, you can't play the running backs on either team, I don't think, especially not in anything outside of a big tournament format. The Browns don't have anyone that plays wide receiver. And the Eagles have, you know, Dorial Green-Beckham, Jordan Matthews. Like, I don't know. we're no. in the wild speculation territory there.
Sorry, I kind of misunderstood you about this game. I'm with you on that part of it. I thought you meant like just a highly owned start, you know, across the industry. So talk to me about Barnage. Like, why
the highest owned guy in this game might be like a kicker from the game or something. But I'm saying like, and the only relevant guy for me is Gary Barnage for cash game purposes.
Yeah, he was a huge red zone target last year. Our system really, really likes him. He flies a little bit under the radar, I think, compared to some of the other tight end names. Though, like we've mentioned a couple different times, I think he was the second highest overall red zone target in the NFL last year. He gets a little bit of a dip because of probably RG3 is just a less accurate passer, but we went into more.
Well, just having a new quarterback. Yeah. I mean, new quarterbacks do different things. They have different guys they can find more easily. You know, they're oftentimes they scheme differently for different quarterbacks. He's obviously not going to be kind of a pocket passer like McCown was. So yeah, it's going to be a different situation. And Barnage was the 26th most targeted receiver in all of football last year, ahead of Rob Gronkowski, ahead of Jordan Reed, and ahead of, you know, reasonably big name wide receivers like Doug Baldwin, Dante Moncrief, guys like that. So I think that he's still one of the safer tight end options, although I don't blame anyone for staying away, given that it's week one, low total, new quarterback, all that stuff.
And Cleveland has some wide receiver questions. I mean, I believe they're starting Pryor and Coleman, who are raw, to say the least. So
yeah, you're not going to play any of those guys in a cash game. So
no, not at all.
Let's just wait and see what happens. We'll readjust things. Prepared to be wrong. Prepared for there to be some breakout guys on both sides of that offense, just because there's so many new faces. But for me, I'm moving on.
One of the more interesting games of the day. I'm just going right now. I'm just going to go right down the list in our lineup tool. So there's no particular order of, you know, highest to lowest games we like. But going right down, the first game up is probably the most interesting fantasy wise one, and that's Oakland at the Saints. This game is not sneaking up on anybody. It has the highest implied total of any game on between Sunday or Monday. Though I guess I think the Washington and Pittsburgh is close, but still not there. They're at 52 right now. Over under. Bunch of different guys to consider here. To walk me through who you see maybe jumping out from this game.
Yeah, so it's the highest total game on the day, and that total seems to be on the rise. Opened at 51, it's up to 52 now. Vegas sees this as a very, very close game. Of course, both teams 7-9 last season without too many huge shakeups. I think the big question marks that people are going to have in this game, or there's going to be a lot of highly owned players, I should say. You could start right up at the quarterback position. You know, Breeze and Carr are both similarly projected in our system as of today. Carr, obviously, quite a bit less expensive on FanDuel, so he might be a better target. Although Breeze, you know, I think Breeze is kind of underrated based on last season because he came into the season so hyped, started off poorly, but then he was quite great. I mean, a lot of people have commented on this, so I won't go into the details, but he was really quite excellent and consistent for the last like 13 weeks of the season. So both of the quarterbacks are in consideration in all formats for me. Is there anything bigger you want to elaborate on there?
No, we're on the same page there. I don't think I'd in the end run any of either of the mountain cash games, though it's close, and especially close on Carr's price on FanDuel. So that's the only thing that actually has me considering it. I think in for FanDuel case this week, there are just enough running quarterbacks, and I just love the floor projections and some of these other guys that we've talked about a little bit, and we'll get to a little bit more. So they're both close for me. I'd be much more inclined to do Carr because of the price, but both have extreme upside, obviously.
And I think, and again, I do think that if, you know, we're going to talk about some other plays, and we mentioned some cash game plays earlier, I think both of them are definitely in the cash game consideration if you're, you know, tweaking all your money manually for some reason. And you don't have a lineup optimizer like the one on our site, you might just find that they fit into your cash game because of the price, and both very, very reasonable options from my perspective.
On the running back side, we have Murray and Ingram stand to get a decent amount of the carries for both teams. I would say that they are both in line, and there's not too many guys pushing up against either one of those guys. Either of those guys are a cash game plays for you, or do you see maybe going somewhere else at running back? Do they intrigue you at all?
They do. I mean, Latavius Murray is kind of one of the more underrated backs in the league, I think. I mean, I talked a lot about this in the ebook that we put out, our free NFL ebook. You can get it at dfsr.com/ebook. But Latavius Murray, one of 7,000-yard rushers last season, you know, and some of those guys like Chris Ivory aren't even re-inheriting their own role. So if you want to talk about just week-to-week safety, Latavius Murray was a guy who provided that last season. Now, his carries did go up and down, and the Raiders did experiment with some other stuff. And, you know, they had a few games where they got blown out and he wasn't on the field much, but very actively featured in the passing game. Several games with four, I think five games with four or more receptions last season, carried the ball 21 times, 19 times, and then 11 times in the last three games of the season. So, you know, is a guy who can top 20 attempts. Wasn't transcendent in the yards per carry department, so that's kind of his big red flag, just 4 yards per carry. But very, very cheap on both FanDuel and DraftKings, and I think a solid, you know, solid if unspectacular play, especially in the game with the highest total of the week.
Yeah, no, I love Murray here. I don't think DeAndre Washington gets into his carries too much. There was some speculation on that. I don't think it doesn't seem like that, you know, the latter is ready. So I'm all about this for Murray, especially on DraftKings. That price is almost too good to pass up if you want to be able to roster some of the more expensive running backs on the day. And also, I mean, Ingram's an interesting case too. He's definitely involved in the passing game, which is a big boost for him. And the only real question for him is how many times the Saints are willing to give him the ball. It's really, he's involved enough, and now it's just the case if he can make that leap into, you know, bell cow running back for them. That's really, to me, that's the only question on him. The talent and the way they use him is all there. It's just, is he going to get enough carries?
Well, right, and it's tricky because I think we can safely call Mark Ingram an injury risk guy now. So if the Saints perceive him that way, maybe he does slide more into that 14 to 15 attempts per game guy that he was for a lot of last season. But, you know, he topped 20 carries a couple of times. He's very, very prominently featured in the passing game. Fewest receptions he had last season in a game was 2, and had as many as 8 in their Week 1 performance against Arizona last year. So definitely a guy they're very comfortable with giving a big workload. They trust his skill, trust him in the passing game, and the short passing game in particular is sort of a de facto running game, if you will. So it strikes me as odd that he's not cheaper, like at 7,300 on FanDuel. Kind of, it's weird because he's so much more a sleeper than that price would indicate for me. Like, I can't imagine he's going to be owned at all, but for big tournament purposes, like, he's a guy that could have 80 yards receiving and 100 yards on the ground. So definitely a guy you don't want to dismiss entirely, and could be a part of that sort of intriguing quarterback, running back, wide receiver stack that you like to talk about. So yeah, he's a guy absolutely on my radar.
Yeah, I have an article going up today that it just reinforces some of those ideas. One being that quarterback, running back, wide receiver stack that you mentioned, the pricing on some of the players this week and the way they're featured in some of their games, you know, the teams, the way they sort of script the game, really, really do stand out to me as a way to get all of a team's production. And this game, this game has all the markings of that on both sides. Carr, Murray, and then, you know, if you want to go Cooper or even Crabtree, who's a great, great target guy from last year. And the same way going the other way between Breeze and Ingram, but then you need to spend down a little bit, going for like a Snead or a Michael Thomas is the way to, it could be a way to go. There's a way to kind of capture all of a team's production in a game that has such a high total. This game has it on both sides. It actually has it on both sides, where if you wanted to just completely stack, the only reason you wouldn't is because that's not a secret to other people.
It's not, but I think you touched on a really important part about going the three position stack, which is the price of the wide receivers you're hoping to pair with them. So it's oftentimes tough to win a big tournament if you're going to spend, so say, you know, and the Steelers can do this sometimes, but Roethlisberger, Brown, and Le'Veon Bell last season, right? Like, it sometimes can be tough for all of those guys to be the best guys for their price range at their position, just because they're so expensive. And, you know, the touches on a football field are finite. While that can happen, oftentimes you'll get something like maybe Roethlisberger and Bell are the two best guys at their position, but Julio Jones slightly outperforms Antonio Brown, and you don't win the week. That said, going quarterback, running back, wide receiver in a case like these are a lot more interesting to me, because on both sides of the ball here, you have wide receivers who have electric upside. You know, Amari Cooper, Brandon Cooks, both are very big upside kind of guys. And then you have solid guys around them too, Crabtree and Snead. And all of these guys are under 8,000. In particular, Crabtree and Snead are very, very cheap. So I can definitely see a situation where, you know, Breeze or Carr has a great game. They throw a touchdown pass to their running back, and then these cheap wide receivers provide a lot of value around the edges. And all of a sudden, you know, it's the highest scoring game of the week. You know, it pushes in lots of possessions. You know, it's back and forth, maybe a lot of incomplete passes, slowing down the clock, and you just wind up with huge totals on both sides of the ball. So I definitely don't mind just picking a team here, going running back, quarterback, wide receiver, and especially the cheap guys. It definitely seems like this could be a week where that could pay off.
And the Crabtree and Snead piece become, for our system, and I tend to agree with it, become two of the better values just overall on DraftKings, even for cash games. If you think that these guys are going to be 7 to 9 target guys, at their prices, that's great. And you yep.
And DraftKings in particular, where yes. you're getting points per reception, right?
I mean, yeah, PPR. So you're going to those are two guys that I'll just probably end up running out in cash games, really, because there's context to it. It's happened before. Crabtree had. I know some people don't think that Crabtree. I've seen some people say like, "Oh, Crabtree's not going to repeat his season from last year." I'm not really just ready to make that statement. He had so many targets. It'd be more shocking to me if he saw like what the 15% less targets, 20% less. Why? I don't sure. know. Like the Carr obviously had something in him. He's a straight up possession guy. He's not going to run downfield and grab you a long touchdown at all. But for point per PPR, it seems like kind of an easy play for me in this game script. Same with Sneed. Sneed's a little bit more of a question mark because we're judging based on some what happened to him as a starter.
Yeah, a handful of starts last season.
But he's so cheap that you can take the risk, and the game really matches up. If he was on a different team, I would be more concerned. But this game, there's a lot of safety just in how the game should play.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think with Crabtree, too, a lot of people are citing, well, Amari Cooper missed some time last season. When he's back, he's going to cut into that pie. And while that's true, they just do totally different things. And in a game where, a sort of potential back and forth contest, I actually kind of like the positioning of the possession receiver a little bit better than the downfield guy, because, there's going to be incentive for Oakland to take fewer risks if they're hanging in this game. So I think Crabtree is a tremendous play and a great value for week one.
Let's move on to a couple of the rest of the games here that, again, varying levels of interesting. Cincinnati and the Jets. Anything to see here at all from a cash game perspective?
No, probably not. I mean, Brandon Marshall, possibly interesting, except there's some trouble there with injury concerns. So on a cash game level, you're probably not going to go there. You're not going to touch the running backs with the committee in Cincinnati and the uncertain nature of Forte's role on the Jets there. There aren't any relevant tight ends, given that Eifert's still out. So, I mean...
And the Jets don't even seem to know who their tight end is or like what's going on.
This just isn't a game. I mean, Marshall and Green, I guess, are always going to be good big tournament options. You've talked about how Decker is a great... red zone threat. He was the most targeted guy in the red zone last season, I think, overall, you told me, right?
Yeah, no, I think, he was number one.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, that's great. I mean, people have talked about Tyler Boyd as a potential big tournament option. I'm not very excited. I think you can do better in that price range. We'll probably talk about that as we go, but those are kind of the relevant guys you need to keep an eye on. One team, actually, interestingly, a play that does come from this game is the Bengals D. This is a game with an extremely low total, not a lot of dynamic position players on the Jets going, so I think the Bengals are a very good value defense on DraftKings in particular. So that's would be one to keep an eye on, I guess.
Yeah, with defenses, we're trying to look for, we're going to really value is just games with low totals and team defenses that are on the right side of those totals. And, if we're going to consider that fumble recoveries and interceptions, while, certain teams will do them more than others on a game-to-game basis, it's wildly unpredictable. So where we're really looking forward to roster on our defenses is just that if they can keep the other team away from the end zone more, then that's just where we're going to look.
Yeah, that's where the safety comes from. I will say that, when we do our calculations and we built out the model for the defensive projections, and of course, thanks to football, there's like 10,000 different things you need to figure out for each position. But we do also look at how frequently the team can get in the backfield and sack the quarterback and drop the other guys for losses and just apply pressure, because that leads to all sorts of positive outcomes like more turnovers, more defensive touchdowns, and more sacks. The Bengals rank reasonably in this area. One thing about the Jets, though, is that Ryan Fitzpatrick was almost never sacked last season. He does throw some interceptions, so there's some upside here, but I think less so than if you had a more erratic quarterback situation. So I don't know that the Bengals are the best GPP defense, but a very, very solid cash game option.
All right, moving on, and this game might just be a total skip. Feel free to say it. Tennessee versus Minnesota. Minnesota is still not totally clear what they're doing with the quarterback situation, and now you're really getting down to the wire if you're not sure if it's going to be Bradford or Hill. Anything interesting in this game at all?
I guess. I mean, people are going to play Adrian Peterson. Guy should be under radar with the uncertain QB situation in Minnesota. He definitely is a favorite to get even more carries and targets than usual. But, how much of a difference does that really make when you're spending $8,200 at the running back position? I'd still rather spend up at wide receiver personally on both sides. So for me, I'm not going to wind up playing him, although I'll understand if you do. At the wide receiver, I think the only guy that really should get any buzz in this game is Tajae Sharpe. And even that feels a little, I mean, you're playing a rookie wide receiver, right? So right. you get what you pay for, but big tournaments, he's basically a minimum price guy on both sites. And with Kendall Wright looking like he's out for week one, he could definitely be a guy who could make some waves, but probably not. You're not feeling thrilled to put him in there in a cash game.
The only thing I could see from like a tournament perspective this week, and I haven't totally talked myself into this, but really just from being a contrarian style, is a couple of these running backs like Peterson and Gurley just are not getting a ton of hype because they're expensive and people are just going to want to go more that wide receiver route, and it makes sense. If you thought, though, there was going to be some separation just because you're getting these transcendent talent guys underowned, that would be the case that I could see for Peterson. There's not a lot to back it up in terms of, you know, like his team's not very good, same with Gurley, but these guys are kind of expensive for a reason because they are just going to get force-fed the ball. And I do think of some weeks, this is a week you see those guys go underowned in tournaments because there is other just like there's just a ton of other running back value out there. That's where I could see just getting guys like that in. But from a cash game perspective, I don't think you can take the risk. We talked about Philly, Cleveland. Let's go on to Atlanta and Tampa Bay. You mentioned in the open about Devontae Freeman, so I don't think we need to go back down that route. I mentioned Julio Jones probably just as a must play in cash games considering the targets. Is there anyone on the Tampa Bay side of the ball, though, that you like?
No.
Moving on.
The guy, you know, there's obviously a lot of upside for Mike Evans here. He's a guy, a very, very interesting receiver who, you know, had some absolutely monumentally huge performances last season, you know, 1,200 yard receiver, only 3 touchdowns. I think he's a guy who ran bad in terms of touchdowns last season, and I expect that to claw back into things for him. But it's not like he's priced like a sleeper either, you know, 7,900 on FanDuel. So I am not going to be clamoring to jam him in my lineups, but, you know, some people will play him. I do love Julio Jones, as you mentioned. And I think the running back situation in Tampa Bay, I mean, Doug Martin was the second highest carries and yards last season. So, you know, they paid him $35 million bucks to keep him for 5 more years. Stands to reason, at least this year, that he'll continue to be the feature back. So, considerably cheaper than Peterson, just 7,200. He's down in that like D'Angelo Williams, Lamar Miller range. I suspect he'll have some reasonable ownership on FanDuel, but I'm not going to play.
Let's go into Houston and Chicago. We wrote up a couple guys from this game in our main picks article. Where do you see some of the safety coming from Houston? They're -6 right now with a lower total, lower overall total, though that -6 is one of the highest, the higher money lines, excuse me, the higher, higher money lines on the day. Anyone you really are targeting in this game or on the Chicago side?
Well, I'll start with the Chicago side because that's a little bit less complex because the answer there is just no. Okay. I'm not going to play anyone in that game. The only intriguing kind of big tournament option there is Zach Miller. He's a guy who's been a very good pass catcher in the past. And, you know, Martellus Bennett obviously put up some really nice numbers for Chicago when he was the featured tight end there. So he's a guy people will consider, a guy you want on your radar, especially for big tournaments. I don't think he's someone a lot of people are talking about. But that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm not going to play Jeremy Langford week one until that situation shakes out, given the other running back value. So the two big position players in this are Lamar Miller and DeAndre Hopkins. You know, both could be extremely high-owned for their positions. Hopkins was, you know, I think the third highest targeted guy in the league last season. He doesn't convert as many of those targets into receptions as some of the other big name guys like Jones and Brown. But still, you know, big-time downfield threat. Can see action in bubble screens and in the possession game. So, you know, a great player, a guy we're going to play in on most sites. The Bears were quite bad against the pass last season, bottom 4 team in that regard. So yeah, tremendous spot there.
The big thing for Hopkins, too, just in that wide receiver one territory, is he is about 5 to 8% less than the next group up, which is like Jones, Brown, and Odell. So, just getting that little bit of savings for his targets is why he ends up sort of jumping a little more to the top in terms of value than those other guys, and just because of the price, he's just that one little tick less, and that matters. So, especially when you know pricing is going to be close,
you can argue that price dip is justified, though. I mean, a brand new quarterback in Brock Osweiler, who, you know, people kind of like, but he was kind of bad in Denver. People talked about him like he's some sort of big name changing hands, like Drew Brees or something. I mean, he's just not. He's a guy with 10 touchdowns and 6 interceptions and 2,000 yards and 8 starts. I mean, that's just not that great. He's fine. And will he be worse than what the Texans had last year? I'm not sure, but you never love to see a big name wide receiver like that have to change quarterbacks. That said, he's so much better than everyone else on his team that Osweiler probably will just look to him by default. So I'll still play him, but I'm not as thrilled as I would be. It doesn't strike me as known a situation as it is for Brown and Jones. That's all.
And give me the case for Lamar Miller. He's a guy we talked about a ton on the last podcast. I don't think we need to go totally crazy talking about him again.
We won't go crazy on this one, but we continue to like him quite a bit. I mean, you've pointed out how Houston likes to run their backs and put him out there for quite a bit of time. And while I don't think it was quite as safe a situation as maybe portrayed up front, I still think the price is so affordable. Chicago's so bad against the run that, you know, you could see him just throwing him out there at 7,600 on FanDuel and on DraftKings as well. And, you know, getting good value. I don't know. I don't blame anyone who looks at that situation and wants to stay away for week one, but you should know you'll probably be in the minority as far as the industry is concerned. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, no, I think he'll be fairly highly owned. He's had a lot of preseason hype. He was, you know, just sometimes you just look at guys who go higher in season-long drafts. He was a guy that really crept up the board. It's not a guy that's going to sneak up on anybody at this point. Football just has the wealth of information around it. So I think you end up seeing a higher ownership, but I've been known to be wrong about these ownership levels before. So I suspect it, but not everyone thinks the same way that we do. Green Bay -4.5 with a 48 over under against Jacksonville this week. They were one of the worst teams really just on defense in general, especially terrible against the pass last year. Is the Green Bay side of the ball, do you see this as a safer venture, or do they maybe just have too many weapons? Where do you see Green Bay this week?
Great question. So when we talked about this going into week one, I was making a case for Rodgers as possibly the most safe cash game play of the week. You know, ultimately it becomes this thing where, you know, you're arguing kind of apples and oranges case, him versus Dak Prescott or even Russell Wilson. All the cases are so different. But, you know, Rodgers is year in, year out one of the most consistent guys, certainly has transcendent upside. There's no kind of feature back there that scares you in terms of chewing up the lion's share of the possessions. While they probably will generate quite a nice lead against Jacksonville, at least that's what my gut tells me, they'll probably do that through the passing game. So I like Rodgers for cash games. I think he's a great big tournament option as well. I won't play Bortles, just don't see any reason to at those prices. For me, the running backs in this game are a stay away as well, but I think there's some pretty interesting stuff going on at the wide receiver position.
I think there's a small, or maybe even a little bit more than small case. Well, he's not a small guy, but maybe because he's smaller. Eddie Lacy is a guy who, you know, there's talk that he loses weight. He lost 20 pounds in the offseason, where, you know, fat Eddie Lacy was a thing last year, so that pretty much tells you what you need to know about him. If you thought that he kind of rounds back into form, because even when he was sort of out of shape, he was still at times decent in that running game, and if they just decide to go that way with him, I could see us, if anything that I think is wrong here, I could see us being a little low on Lacy's overall carries, where, I mean, I'm fine going into the week with just, again, taking a sort of wait-and-see approach on how much they like.
So many puns, by the way, in this. Round into shape. Wait and see approach. Come on, man. Just got to jump in.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean to do any of it, man. My brain just works like that, man. Just like a pun generator. But yeah, so he's a guy that I could see us making a small adjustment on when it comes to his carries going forward. Again, it's still so hard to know exactly what the conditioning does for him or just – so I don't know.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say nothing. I mean, preseason talk is one thing. If you just look at how the Packers used him in essentially an identical situation, actually where they had fewer offensive weapons, the guy averaged 12 carries a game in the last five games of the season, including the playoffs, where obviously they have an incentive to put their best foot forward. So I don't know. Why bother? You know,
yeah, I'm not going to do it.
Touch for cash games, obviously. And yeah, while he could be a breakout guy, it just seems like it's not like he's 6,200, right? He's 7,100 on FanDuel. There's no reason.
Yeah, that's the big problem.
I'm making a disgusted face. I think it's coming through in the audio as
because
well.
He's in that same price tier as D'Angelo Williams and Lamar Miller. I would never choose Lacy.
You're insane to play him over D'Angelo Williams.
I was mostly just saying that I could see us giving him a bump if anything. What about the wide receivers here? Nelson looks like he's going to be back. Randall Cobb, Jared Cook. Any of these guys stand out to you from the receiving core?
I mean, I think these, again, are interesting big tournament options. Jordy Nelson was one of the very best when he was healthy. You know, he was consistently like the top target guy in all of the NFL. All indicators are that Jordy looks like Jordy. Still probably not a cash game play. Again, you're not really getting a value on him. Like, I would like him a lot more if he were 10% cheaper. Like, if he were 7,600, I think I would start to be making a case for him as a sneaky week one play. Even in a great matchup with Jacksonville, I don't see this as a cash game play. I will say I suspect he'll be off radars for big tournaments, so wouldn't be shocked to see him crush it there. Allen Robinson on the Jacksonville side of the ball, I think probably people are a little bit too excited about him after last season's breakout. You know, guys who tend to generate a lot of their value on long balls, and especially, you know, from behind and garbage time, all that kind of stuff, are oftentimes regression candidates. So while I loved him and we put him out there as a sneaky guy all the way up until he wasn't so sneaky anymore last season, I think it might be a time for a divorce from Allen Robinson for the DFSR community. So while that'll be hard, you know, we'll all remain friends, keep it amicable, make sure the kids aren't hurt and all that stuff. But yeah, I'm kind of off Robinson for week one.
Yeah, you never want to hurt the kids. Kansas City and San Diego, we mentioned that the running back situation there, so I don't think we need to revisit that. Kansas City comes in as the favorite here. Anyone standing out to you from that we didn't mention on KC, like, you know, Jeremy Maclin maybe, or anybody at all from the San Diego side of the ball, obviously facing a pretty good defense in Kansas City?
Yeah, sure. So Keenan Allen, I think, is a guy who is not getting enough respect. And actually, when you compare him to Jordy Nelson, I talked about how I would like Jordy Nelson in the 7,600 range. Well, Keenan Allen's 7,400. And while he's never had a stretch quite like what Nelson did at the beginning of the season where he got hurt, Keenan Allen, I mean, he put up some monstrous target games. Like when I was just going back in time, because you kind of remember and you kind of remember feeling frustrated with overpaying for him. And, you know, even those of us who are more analytical can fall into that emotional trap. But like, he had an 18 target game last season. Right. He had a 17 target game 2 weeks before that, and then a 15 target game against Green Bay where he caught 14 passes. So like, he's capable of absolutely huge games, and not only, you know, big time touchdown games, because obviously if you're catching the ball 14 times in a game, you're one of those might just be in the end zone, but just big time possession games too. River's super comfortable with him, and he was on the way to being like one of these $8,500 style receivers before the injury took hold. So I think that very, very great, sneaky, cash game, big tournament, all-around option for week one against Kansas City.
Yeah, Kansas City was 22nd in the league against in DVOA against wide receiver ones last year, so bottom third, read into that what you will. But you know, they weren't exactly shutting WR ones down through the course of the year. They were much better in the WR2 and tight end range than they were against just like the big guys. I would consider Allen to be the wide receiver one in this case. I think he is going to be a guy that no one will have, and our system likes quite a bit, and I think it's correct. So, yeah, no, I'm totally on board with the Keenan Allen piece of that. Anyone else I missed?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, just guys that people are going to consider. You got Travis Kelce. He was showing up, you know, in kind of the flex spot on DraftKings for us for a while. A lot of people view him as one of the higher upside tight ends, I think rightfully. And I think that, you know, as far as Macklin's concerned, just not a guy I'm particularly looking at for week one. You know, the Chiefs' just propensity to run the ball, even in an uncertain running situation, makes me not so interested. So I think that's probably it for this game.
All right, moving into Baltimore and Buffalo. Please say skip, though. You might have someone that you want to, that you want to talk about here.
Only guy on this one, big tournament play, Sammy Watkins. I think that's it.
Yeah, I don't mind Tyrod Taylor, actually. The Taylor piece, if you think he takes a step forward this year, I like the, I mentioned before, guys that can run. I honestly don't even mind him totally from like a cash game perspective. He's significantly below the people that we mentioned before, so I'm not putting him in that same tier. But he was pretty high in our system in terms of high, you know, overall raw points projected. And I could see grabbing him in a tournament, honestly, just almost as like a standalone guy. Like, I wouldn't even feel the need to stack him with somebody else from the Buffalo side of the ball. But just considering how much he is going to have the ball and the fact that he can get out and run, I don't mind him from a tournament perspective, especially considering that he is pretty high in our system, projected for hot more than, you know, some other bigger names. I'm not going to go down the list right now, yeah, but he's pretty high up there. So I'm kind of on the Tyrod Taylor train. If it was any other week, I'd be higher on him, but there are just other quarterback values here.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, pairing him with Sammy Watkins, I think, is still a reasonable one, just because they lack, you know, they've used Sammy Watkins as a super high target guy, and Watkins only 7,300. So, yeah, it's all good. By the way, side note, if you're going to tell me to skip and then do 5 minutes on Tyrod Taylor, you know, just saying. That's
yeah, I shouldn't cast stones, I guess, or throw stones at guys like you. The moving in now to the 4 o'clock games. The first one that we have up here is Seattle -10 against Miami. We spent a lot of time on the Michael and Rawls situation. We also sort of in passing mentioned guys like Russell Wilson, who our system likes quite a bit. There's also Doug Baldwin. What do you look? Do you see this as like a cash game play? Our system certainly does.
Yeah, so Baldwin, I wrote up a big piece about him and kind of how he's slotting into the situation in Seattle. I think a lot of people have rightfully pointed at Baldwin as a guy who ran hot in terms of touchdowns last season. But I think they just disregard a lot of the things he does really well. I mean, first of all, he converts 75% of the balls thrown his way in the catches, which is dramatically ahead of the average for the top 40 wide receivers, which was about 63%. And you compare it to a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, who had 192 targets and just 111 receptions. And it just kind of shows you how Seattle uses him. I mean, one of the reasons Wilson's completion percentage is so high is because they throw so many short routes to Doug Baldwin. So Baldwin only 6,700 on FanDuel seems kind of criminally cheap to me. And yeah, you can't count on a touchdown from him every game, but he just doesn't need to, right? He's going to catch a lot of balls underneath. They use him as sort of the running game sometimes as well. Highly targeted. Very, very safe to me. I don't know. 6,700 is just so cheap. It's hard to emphasize how big a difference that is, even from 7,700 or the other guys in the higher price range. And obviously his red zone usage gives him big upside too. So I like the Wilson-Baldwin stack quite a bit for your cash game purposes.
I'm likely running him in most of my FanDuel cash games, I would say, at that price point. I love the price point on him. It's just because, you know, the way that the salaries separate on FanDuel, you know, you don't get that much of a savings going from like Baldwin to like Willie Snead, who we mentioned before, right? So the spread on DraftKings is much bigger, but on FanDuel it's not, and he just isn't a tier above those guys. So he ends up being in that tier two wide receiver, but it's such a great value. His targets trended all in the right direction. I love him. I know, you know, we set him up. It's a guy that we've talked about a bunch. On the Miami side of the ball, anything?
No, not really. Well, related to the Miami side of the ball is just the Seattle defense, too. Like, right. Seattle defense is going to show up as a chalk D this week. Seattle heavily favored, minus 10. The 44 total means that no one thinks Miami's going to do anything in this game. So I could see them putting up big numbers here. And I should say more safe numbers. Like, they're not a huge sack team. Miami doesn't get sacked a ton. So I think that, great defensive play for sure.
Another one of the big implied totals on the week is Detroit heading into Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. We have Andrew Luck back for the Colts. They have a couple of weapons on that side of the ball. The Detroit passing game is something we spent a decent amount of time on other podcasts and in write-ups talking about. Where are you looking in this game?
Well, I'm skipping over the running backs. I'm not going to consider Gore or Abdullah. Abdullah in particular just seems like just an absolute committee situation. Gore, I think, just rather unexciting from a total touches and a red zone usage perspective. So not really considering anything there. I do think the passing games for both teams are very, very interesting, really for all formats, but particularly for big tournaments. One guy who's going to see a ton of cash game play this week is Marvin Jones. We've talked about him and how maybe we're less excited than other people on him, but it's still undeniable that he's just so cheap and does have some pedigree, and the combination of price and pedigree, you know, for a guy at 5,500 and moving into a situation that doesn't have a lot of other weapons probably means, especially on DraftKings where he's so, so cheap, very, very strong consideration. I suspect he'll be a chalk play over there. And particularly, I mean, Golden Tate is now listed as questionable, which, you know, in the new NFL doesn't mean as much as it did in the old NFL, but still means something. And if he's banged up, that could give Jones an increased role as well. So while Tate did return to full practice on Thursday, I think Jones's stock is high enough to where I'll consider him in all formats.
Yeah, he's in our optimal lineups on DraftKings as it stands right now. I suspect it stays. What about the Colts side? You have a couple interesting mm-hmm. receivers here. They still have some offensive line issues, though. You know, it remains to be seen what Luck can do if he has enough time. I'm not sure that's going to be the case. How do you view the Colt wide receivers this week?
I view them very highly. I mean, and again, this is all just in the vacuum of price. But in a game topping 50 on the over-under chart, to have two receivers, the two feature receivers with an ace-level quarterback like Andrew Luck, both be under 7,000, I think is kind of a red flag to me. I mean, Hilton is one of the notorious doesn't convert receptions into catches thing. He was under 50% in terms of – or no, he was right at 50% in terms of targets converted to receptions last season. Had some games like he had a game against New Orleans where he had 15 targets and 4 catches, but 150 yards, right? So he definitely can be a downfield threat. Huge upside there for under 7,000. Wouldn't shock me if he's like in the high sevens range by the end of the season. So great time to cash in on value there. Dante Moncrief as well. You know, I listed him earlier, but he's a guy who saw top 25 receptions in the NFL last season as well. So I think that, or I'm sorry, in terms of targets. So I think that both guys are strong considerations for me, for really for all formats, but particularly for big tournaments where they're going to be off people's radars.
And Dwayne Allen's a guy that could become more of a part of the passing game. We're just not totally sure yet. Again, it remains to be seen what kind of time Luck has and if he's going to need to outlet more. The outlets in this case are Moncrief and Allen, less than Hilton, I would say. So if you think that he's going to be under pressure, even from not the best Lions defense in the world, then those would be the guys to look at just from a volume perspective. I agree with you just about everything you said. Everything you said in that game. Moving into the Dallas Giants game, I don't think we should spend too much more time on Dak here. He's going to be the chalk quarterback play. We've discussed in previous podcasts and in our write-ups both the positives and negative sides of Dak. I think when it all comes out in the wash, you see him as, when it all said and done, I think he's just the highest owned player on any slate, barring some kind of definitive running back news from some of those guys we mentioned before. After Dak, we've had some questions about guys like Ezekiel Elliott, Dez Bryant. Is this a Cowboy situation where you trust anything else about their offense?
No. I mean, and Elliott would be a lot more interesting if he weren't 7,900 on FanDuel and 73 on DraftKings. Like, I just don't know how you can pay up for a guy who's never taken a carry in the NFL. And, like, sure, he's got some pedigree and people are excited and doesn't seem to be a lot of competition, but I just wouldn't be surprised at all if he just split carries in his first NFL game. Like, stranger things have happened. So I'm not touching the guy. And I don't even, frankly, see the upside on a points per dollar basis being there, given that you can get guys in similar situations. Like, what's fundamentally different about him and Christian Michael if Christian Michael gets a starting nod in Seattle? I don't think very much. So I'm not touching any Cowboys this week, aside from Prescott, obviously. And Prescott, I think, is a great standalone guy just because, again, he's so cheap. I do think there's some interesting Giants plays here. Both Eli at 72 on FanDuel, great big tournament guy. He's shown 4 touchdown upside in the past. Obviously, Odell Beckham Jr., transcendent talent at the wide receiver position. You're paying for it, so no surprises there, but no one could fault you for playing him in any format as well. Not really interested in any tight ends this game, or really any of these downfield receivers, or I should say just down-level receivers like Terrence Williams and Cole Beasley, Sterling Shepard. Like, none of those guys are doing it for me, so I think it's a pretty shallow game, all things considered, outside of the quarterback position.
The one case you can make, I think, for a guy like Sterling Shepard, he's very, very cheap on FanDuel, and this is strictly for tournaments. And if you think that the Dallas secondary is just working overtime on Beckham, then that could open things up. Beckham wasn't great against Dallas in 2 meetings last year. I know it's hard to use that totally as rule and law about what's going to happen in the future, but Beckham was not good against his Dallas defense last year. If you think that it opens up more for Shepard, the price is what really is intriguing more than anything else. But again, rookie, first round draft pick rookie, so kind of a guy, but rookie wide receivers, there's more tales of demise than there are of great success with that role. So, but I do see Shepard as having some upside. The Sunday night game is the Patriots heading to Arizona. Arizona's a -6.5, which is about as big a dog as you'll ever see the Patriots. Of course, it's without Tom Brady. Gronk a little bit banged up here. What do you think about this game? Does the Arizona being a heavily favored team in this case give you the pass to start a guy like David Johnson, or do you just not really want to do it because, it's sort of like a meet in the middle in terms of not so much value here?
I just don't know why I'm going to pay $8,800 for David Johnson. That's really the thing no one can explain to me. Obviously there's great upside, and it wouldn't shock me if he's one of the higher scoring players of the week. He did have a top 20 fantasy point performance last season, but
he had a top one. He had a top one fantasy performance last season.
Oh, was it the best overall? Yeah. So yeah, okay. So he's got some upside
For running backs, at least. I think Brown beat him in the game. Say. Yeah.
But again, at $8,800, I don't know. No thanks. I just don't want to spend $8,800 on really any running back, and you need to have a proven track record for me to consider there. And again, New England's not a pushover, so I am just not gonna play him. And I'm definitely not going to play any of these New England guys. Again, uncertain situation and spotty track record at best of being able to project their their running backs. I do think wide receiver is more interesting in this game, but again, kind of just for a big tournament perspective. You have John Brown, Michael Floyd, and Larry Fitzgerald all kind of clustered price-wise, and I think all kind of clustered projection-wise, at least in our system. And that's because Arizona likes to spread the ball around. So maybe you get lucky and this is the week you select Michael Floyd and he's the guy, or Larry Fitzgerald. I think John Brown's still pretty underrated. He's the cheapest of the three. So any of those guys I could see being playable. Obviously Edelman, just as the possession guy, the outlet for Garoppolo. I'm not going to touch Gronk, you know, just I don't see how you can possibly pay up for a guy like that with more competition at the position in Martellus Bennett. Injury stuff, you know, just bad quarterback, like just why? Don't do it.
Yeah, this whole game strikes me as like a mile wide, an inch thin in terms of just there are plenty of guys and there's plenty of name recognition guys and there's plenty of talent guys here. There's just almost too many guys with just a few too many question marks. So, and in the question marks either being, do I want to pay up for these guys or just are they going to get enough touches? There's just too many things that too much speculation here for me. Yeah. It's mostly a stay away. And it's not because the teams are bad. These teams are good. It's just that, you know, they just maybe have too many guys and you just can't really hone in on it.
All right, so a quick no halftime challenge for you, because I think this is going to be interesting, because I do think you're going to see Gronk played in week one. So no halftime, if you guys don't know, new DFS site where you can play one-on-one DFS challenges, where you choose a player, throw out a challenge. So in this case, I'm going to challenge Doug with a guy from the next game I think we're going to talk about. So I can throw out Jordan Reed at the tight end position, and I could say I think Jordan Reed is going to score more fantasy points straight up than Rob Gronkowski, throw out a certain amount of money, and people can accept or they can just pass. So you can log into the No Halftime app right from your phone, surf through all the challenges that people have thrown out there, and people will throw out some great profitable challenges for you. You can even just use our optimizer and win them pretty easily, in my experience. But yeah, so nohalftime.com, use coupon code DFSR25, and you can get a $25 bonus up to 100% on your first, or up to $25 bonus at 100% of your deposit there. So DFSR25, nohalftime.com. Now, the No Halftime Challenge of the Week, Doug, moving into the next game. What do you think about Jordan Reed straight up against Gronk for this week?
Yeah, I would take Reed. I would take Barnage over Gronk.
So you're throwing out the someone puts on No Halftime, Gary Barnage versus Rob Gronkowski. You like Barnage straight up?
I think so. It's probably really contrarian, and I'm probably going to end up regretting it. But
I think you could get that challenge accepted.
I think I would too. And but you know, just like the Gronk thing, like. So what is the motivation here? Like Gronk is already like their best player. They've showed that they at times need to just be sort of cautious with how they use him because they just are playing for the ultimate end game on him, and which is to win the Super Bowl. Without Brady here, if you think there's some chance that like you're already an underdog in this game, sure. You're on the road, you don't have Brady. You could get down early. Like, why? There's a chance they just don't even bring
it. You
think
they just punt it?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, they've been super cautious with him, and it makes sense. Like, the Patriots are the smartest team in the league when it comes to stuff like this, and they understand this stuff more than any other team. And of anything, like, if they're just down, why even bother getting him hurt? Like, why even bother getting any of their guys hurt?
No, I'm with you. So, I think it's probably, it's a total stay away. I got you.
So let's move into the Monday night games where we have a couple of interesting things here. One, you know, again, in sort of that big game to target, Washington and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh at -3 with a 50 over under. We already discussed the Antonio Brown thing. We've mentioned D'Angelo Williams as well. Where, you know, you just mentioned Jordan Reed, so there's plenty of guys to consider in this game. Where are we going? I mean, I don't think we need to revisit the Brown thing. We said that. D'Angelo Williams was the guy we mentioned as probably ends up being a cash game play. Maybe not both sites, only because of the price on FanDuel. He's a fantastic value. He was in our optimal lineups for Thursday. What about a guy like Roethlisberger, or if we're worried about Brown, maybe any of the wide receiver two guys coming in for the Steelers?
Now, I'm not going to pay any of the wide receiver two guys, probably. I mean, outside of big tournaments, I think you can speculate on maybe Marcus Wheaton, although he's listed as questionable.
And he sucks.
He does suck that, but you know, he's shown that he can be highly targeted in a game-to-game basis. He's really not an end zone guy, so that really dings him quite a bit. But no, I think D'Angelo Williams is my favorite running back play of the week, just given how the Steelers used him when Bell was out last season. I think it's pretty clear. I think his price is going to rise by 10% at least after the week one, so tremendous buy low opportunity for me. You mentioned Reed. I think Reed might move into that, you know, pretty clear tier guy number one tight end category until Brady's back for Gronkowski. So another guy you can really consider. A lot of high-end talent here. I don't love a lot of the stuff around the edges, though. I mean, Pierre Garçon has shown to be a high-targeted guy in the past, not really replicated that recently. DeSean Jackson, obviously a great downfield threat for big tournaments, but I'm not going to play Roethlisberger or Cousins outside of anything, you know, outside of anything other than a big tournament. So
I do like that the Steelers do, like we talked about before, concentrate their value on a couple of different guys. They've done that over and over and over again. There's no reason to suspect they get away from it too much here, even with the addition of Norman. So I think you can feel pretty safe in a situation where you have Williams and Brown together in your cash games. If they're going to do anything, it's most likely going to come from those two spots. Finally, the 10-20 game on Monday night, your brand new Los Angeles Rams versus the 49ers with new coach and Chip Kelly. What, if anything, is there anything here at all to see?
This Monday night at 10:20, it's Case Keenum, Blaine Gabbert in a California matchup. I mean, like, there's nothing to see at all, which is to say. I mean, Todd Gurley again, obviously he's great, but super expensive. Why bother category for me. He could have the best week of the week, you know, the best total of the week, you know, get all that stuff out of the way. One guy that I think is interesting from this game is Tavon Austin, guy who shows up reasonably high on a points per dollar basis in our system. Obviously, this is only a big tournament play, but, you know, hopefully now that we've gotten that out of the way, we can talk about him. He's a guy that the Rams used in both a running and a wide receiver capacity last season. Young guy, big talent, a guy they're very excited about. They signed him to a huge extension, so wouldn't be surprising at all to me to see them try to really feature him in a nationally televised game. Hopefully they're only all season, although I haven't really looked into it very much. But yeah, no, I think he's the most intriguing fantasy option for me from this game this week, which is to say I'm not very intrigued by this game this week.
Like I said before, earlier in the pod, the only reason I could get excited about Gurley and the excitement in quotes is that because I just don't think many people are going to own him, and he is just a top overall talent guy. And so when you just get talent and you think that people aren't going to play him because they found value along the edges somewhere else, then I think you can get some separation on him if the Rams just say we're just going to force feed him the ball the whole game. You know, the Chip Kelly offense, it depends what we're going to see here. If he totally overhauls or has overhauled, you know, how they plan to play. Clearly he did that in Philadelphia. If they're going to, and you know, and one thing they wanted to do in Philadelphia was run the ball as much as, you know, they could in optimal situations, that could give a boost to Carlos Hyde. But the fact that the Rams play such a slow plotting offense and the pace is so bad that it just limits how much they're going to, you know, the 49ers could just see the ball, even if they were able to make some strides on offense.
Yeah,
so,
I was going to say, Vegas doesn't think that Chip Kelly is going to make any big difference there because the Niners are projected for fewer than 20 points this game, so not a lot to get excited about.
No. So I think we covered it. This was our longest podcast ever. We are...
Not true. Longer ones 2 years ago that you just want to forget about.
Those were garbage.
Out of your memory, but our longest since in the new era.
New DFSR era, these are our longest podcasts. Hope we helped break some things down for week one. Like we said before, we will be tweaking and managing our projection system all the way up until lock and after on Sunday. So, you know, the thing you see there now might not be the thing that it ends up as the optimal lineups, but you are free to go in there, grab a free trial, dfsr.com/NFL, like the letters that stand for the National Football League. You can grab this is the last piece of our free trial through week one, which you can grab. Also, we'll give you projections for MLB in there now, $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, good luck with week one. We'll be around in the chat room answering questions from now through basically lineup lock on Sunday. Good luck, bud.
Yeah, baby, let's do it.